ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 5th of March. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. The Prime Minister will announce Australia will set up a $2 billion fund to boost investment in Southeast Asia as he meets with nine leaders from across the region at the Australia-ASEAN Summit in Melbourne today. Anthony Albanese wants to use the diplomatic whirlwind to bolster Australia's strategic and commercial ties with the booming region. But he'll also have to navigate some difficult issues ranging from the South China Sea to the war in Gaza. Here's Foreign Affairs reporter Stephen Jedgetts.
It's a familiar refrain which will be heard many times over in Melbourne over coming days. Malaysia's Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim given a military welcome ahead of an official meeting with Anthony Albanese.
My meeting with Prime Minister Anwar today emphasised our steadfast commitment to this vision and a shared desire to bring our people and our economies closer still.
Australia's diplomatic ties with Southeast Asia are already quite strong, but trade and particularly investment are lagging. Mr. Albanese has a solution today. He'll announce a new $2 billion facility designed to boost Australian investment in Southeast Asia, particularly in infrastructure and clean energy.
Australia's security and prosperity are intertwined with those of Southeast Asia.
But Southeast Asia is also home to rising tensions, particularly in the South China Sea, where Beijing and several Southeast Asian nations have overlapping claims. The president of the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., telling the Lowy Institute in Melbourne that China's attempts to use its Coast Guard and Navy are damaging.
Provocative, unilateral and illegal actions continue to infringe upon our sovereignty. This pattern of aggression obstructs our path towards ASEAN's vision of the South China Sea.
Australia would like to build up a consensus that China's actions are unacceptable and ramp up pressure on Beijing to curb its actions. But others are not convinced, including Anwar Ibrahim, who made it clear he does not want Western countries to push Malaysia to take a tougher line with China.
And if they have problems with China, they should not impose it upon us. We do not have a problem with China.
Another potential sticking point is the war in Gaza. Malaysia and Indonesia would like the meeting to issue a forceful denunciation of Israel. But Mr. Anwar hinted a compromise might be in the offing.
Well, the first question, I think the general consensus is calling for a ceasefire and great humanitarian support. Probably avoiding the contentious issues between Palestine and Israel, but at least for now, this is fire and humanitarian assistance.
Diplomacy is always the art of the possible.
Stephen Jedgetts there. China's most important political meeting gets underway today as the nation's economy continues to struggle under the weight of a real estate crisis and slowing growth. People in China and around the world will be waiting to hear how the government intends to address the current economic woes. East Asia correspondent Kathleen Calderwood filed this report from Beijing.
For the next 7 days, Beijing's cavernous Great Hall of the People will be filled with the footsteps and conversations of thousands of people from all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
The National People's Congress brings together nearly 3,000 delegates once a year as the government announces the country's agenda and goals for the next 12 months. That will begin today with the delivery of the government work report by the Premier, Li Qiang. Congress spokesperson Lo Chin-jian is backing in the country's economic potential.
As long as we persist in self-reliance and self-improvement, there are no hurdles that can't be tackled.
China's struggling economy is casting a shadow over this year's Congress, with a continuing real estate crisis, slowing growth and the lowest foreign domestic investment since the early 90s. George Magnus from Oxford University's China Centre says the government has already indicated it wants to pursue economic growth through new industries.
The government wants China to make continued or relentless progress towards the exploitation of science and technology in making China a world leader in, obviously it is already in electric vehicles and batteries, but in artificial intelligence and in semiconductors, you know, all of the kind of much more complex areas of technology.
There's an enormous amount of media here at the Great Hall of the People. In fact, state media has reported that 3,000 journalists have registered to cover the event, including 1,000 from Hong Kong, Taiwan and overseas. Usually there's a press conference during the Congress by the Chinese Premier Li Qiang, but we've now learned that in a highly unusual move, he won't be doing that this year, nor will he be doing it for the next 3 years.
Wendy Song from the Atlantic Council's Global China Hub explains there could be a few reasons for this unexpected change.
I see that announcement as a sign of China's turn towards ever greater tightening on narrative control, that there will be one message coming out of the Central Party leadership. This is all seen to be leading back to the one message that power has been consolidated and that Xi Jinping is here to personally be an architect of all aspects of policymaking.
But for today, it will still be the Premier Li Qiang taking centre stage. This is Kathleen Calderwood reporting from Beijing for AM.
America's top court has unanimously ruled in favour of Donald Trump, allowing him to remain on state primary ballots. The decision reverses a ruling from the Colorado Supreme Court that found he'd engaged in insurrection and barred him from running. North America correspondent Carrington Clark joined me from Washington a short time ago.
Well, there's no doubt that this is a clear legal victory for the former US president, and it is consequential. The context is that previously the Colorado Supreme Court had found Donald Trump had engaged in insurrection by both supporting and inciting the January 6, 2021 attack on the US Capitol. The US Supreme Court has now overruled that decision and says it's not up to individual states to make a determination like that. In part, it says it's concerned that if it allowed states to make that decision, then it would lead to this patchwork of decisions across the country, which would cause electoral chaos. Instead, the US Supreme Court says it will be up to Congress to make any such determination. Now, notably, the Colorado Supreme Court had found Donald Trump had engaged in that insurrection, but the US Supreme Court has not made any decision about whether or not Donald Trump is or isn't an insurrectionist. Donald Trump, though, has welcomed the decision in a speech from his Florida Mar-a-Lago home.
They worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now.
Carrington, this decision's come just in time for Super Tuesday there tomorrow. What does it mean for that?
Well, voters in 15 states and the territory of America Samoa will get their chance to decide who they want to be the presidential candidates for the two major political parties tomorrow. Donald Trump is well ahead in the Republican race. And of course, today's decision removes at least one aspect of doubt about his candidacy. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is still a candidate in the Republican field, but Donald Trump is expected to sweep all races. And if there is such a sweep, then there will be a huge amount of pressure on her to withdraw from the race. On the Democratic side, President Joe Biden isn't facing a competitive race, but he would be concerned about a potential protest vote. We did see last week in Michigan, 100,000 plus people voting against him in that state's primary contest, mainly because of anger about the way he is supporting Israel in its continuing bombardment of Gaza. And there is a push now to continue that momentum in other states. So they'll be looking to see whether or not there is a building protest. But given that both parties have such a sizable number of supporters who are angry with the most likely candidates for their parties, the question is which side will see the biggest protest vote against their candidates and whether or not those people are willing to actually turn up and support the candidates come November.
Now, is Mr. Trump in the clear then, given all those various cases regarding the 2020 election result?
Yeah, Donald Trump still has a slew of legal issues to deal with. He's got 91 criminal counts that he's facing across four criminal trials. The question is whether or not any of those trials will actually start before the presidential election. And the Supreme Court still needs to make a determination on another matter regarding how much immunity the US presidency actually offers office holders. Donald Trump is making an argument that he can't be prosecuted for things he did while holding the presidency. So that decision will still need to be made by the Supreme Court. And that oral arguments for that decision will actually happen in April. But again, we're waiting to see how quickly they'll make a determination. So a host of legal issues potentially still imperiling his candidacy. But at this point, a successful day for Donald Trump, at least on this particular legal count.
Carrington Clark there in Washington. A pattern of abusive behaviour known as coercive control isn't always easy to identify, and yet it's a factor in almost all cases of family violence. The federal government's launching new resources to educate the public and healthcare professionals, hoping it'll lead to more people seeking help. Isabel Massali reports.
From school visits to writing books, Deborah Thompson is determined to teach others the signs of coercive control. The Tasmanian woman is a domestic violence survivor, an advocate and activist. She has a disability which affects her speech.
I've been using my knowledge and lived experience to inform people about what to look for early in the relationship so they can leave before violence escalates and certainly before it becomes homicide. It's only been in the last 5 years that it's become the term coercive control has become more well known in Australian society, and that's really important, but I do feel that we have a long way to go.
It's something the federal government recognises too, so to raise greater awareness, it's releasing new resources, including fact sheets and videos.
Coercive control is when someone close to you tries to control or be in charge of the things you do.
Attorney General Mark Dreyfus says it provides simple information for those considered most at risk of family violence.
Coercive control is almost always present in situations of family and domestic violence. Tackling it is critical, and developing our shared understanding of what it looks like and how to help is essential.
One part of the resources is for healthcare practitioners who may notice signs in their patients, for example, their partner always answering questions for them. There's also information on technology-facilitated abuse and fact sheets translated into other languages. Lara Frieden is the CEO of Women's Legal Services Australia.
They take an intersectional approach to explaining how coercive control impacts particular cohorts of people. So, for example, there's a particular fact sheet around how coercive control impacts people who identify as LGBTQIA+, or people with disabilities, older people, or people from migrant and refugee backgrounds. So what these fact sheets do is they really recognise that victim survivors of coercive control are not a homogenous group. And so we need resources that will improve understanding of how coercive control might impact people in different ways.
The ACT government recently released a review of domestic and family violence deaths over the past 20 years and found coercive control was a factor in almost all cases. Lara Frieden says it's important to identify problematic behaviour at an early stage and welcomes the federal government's new resources, but cautions.
It's really important that we have a shared understanding of coercive control across the country. But as shared understanding of coercive control increases, we're likely to see more and more people coming forward, identifying the behaviour that they're experiencing and seeking help. And what we don't have across Australia is a significantly well-funded support system to make sure that everyone who needs help can get it.
Mark Dreyfus again.
Oh, we need to make sure that there is sufficient frontline services, that when people come forward, when people who are affected, when victim survivors come forward or when their family members come forward, that there is someone there to respond. So, yes, it's something that we're going to keep under review.
The Federal Attorney General Mark Dreyfus ending Isabel Massali's report. And if you're in an abusive situation or you know someone who is, you can call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732. If it's an emergency, call 000. Toddlers are missing out on about 1,100 words a day because of screen time. That's what new Australian research has found, and those leading the study are warning parents about technoference, where technology could be interfering with their children's language development. With more, here's National Education and Parenting reporter Connor Duffy.
Ready, 3, 2, 1. Yay! Woo!
Callum Wally is a proud new dad who builds his day around his young daughter.
Elizabeth, she's our world. She's awesome. She's just ticked over 19 months old.
But like most parents, sometimes Callum needs to fall back on television to keep Elizabeth occupied.
It is a simple solution for us when things are getting a little bit hectic and when I'm getting back from work, when Lizzie's running amok and she's running around, you just need a little bit, 20 minutes to get some stuff done. It's just an easy thing to put on for a little bit.
But he's shocked by the latest research on screen time and feels parents are often left to work things out themselves.
I think what's worrying is you become first-time parents and, you know, filling a formula bottle up, it gives you exact ratio of what you need to do. It gives you exact instructions. Whereas with screen time, there's no real concrete method as to how much is too much.
Now the screen time habits of 220 other Australian households have been tracked as part of a new study with global ramifications. Run by researchers at the Telethon Kids Institute in Western Australia, it found the average three-year-old could be missing out on hearing up to 1,100 words, making 840 vocalisations, and hearing nearly 200 conversations each day because they were zoning out to screens instead of talking to their families. The team was led by Dr. Mary Bruch.
What we know from previous research is that the more words and conversations that children can have, the better when it comes to their early language development.
The team analysed 7,000 hours of electronic sounds and audio of parents talking around children aged 1 to 3. Mary Bruch doesn't want parents to feel guilty or cut out screen time altogether, but to be aware of what she calls technoference.
Technoference is the idea that screen time is interfering with the amount of language and conversation and connection that children are experiencing because screens are interfering with that.
She stopped short of linking the lost learning to speech delays, and an independent expert cautions that the findings might not translate to poorer speech and literacy outcomes in later schooling. Dr. Michael Notell is a senior lecturer at the University of Queensland who's helped review studies on screen time.
The assumption here is that by hearing fewer words, kids are going to develop less quickly. And there's some evidence to suggest that matters. But if you're meeting the WHO guidelines, then kids in this study were only kind of hearing less than 4% fewer words than they were otherwise.
The study was published today in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Pediatrics.
National Education and Parenting reporter Connor Duffy there. Matilda's captain Sam Kerr will face a criminal trial after pleading not guilty to the alleged racial harassment of a police officer. Europe correspondent Isabella Higgins joins me now. Isabella, what do we know about this case?
Well, Sabra, there aren't a lot of details that we do know at the moment. This was kept very quiet until this court appearance or reported court appearance. Authorities have been quiet. We've now heard from the Met Police, who confirmed that an incident did take place in January and that Sam Kerr, who lives in Richmond, was charged with a racially aggregated offence. It relates to an incident involving a police officer who was responding to a complaint involving a taxi fare. So they are the very few details that we have at the moment. It's being reported by the Daily Mail that she appeared in court, that it was a very brief appearance, but yes, that this was a crime relating to racial harassment of a police officer. The ABC has reached out to Sam Kerr's manager and we were told that there would be no comment at this time, but certainly it is a story that very quickly spread across the world, all over the UK. Of course, she is one of Australia's best known sporting stars. She's also a very recognisable face here in the UK, known for being one of Chelsea women's best strikers. So it's news that's spreading quickly, and I think we can expect that this story will continue to develop over the next few hours.
And Isabella, there's also bad news for soccer fans, with Sam Kerr looking unlikely for the Matildas Olympics campaign in Paris this year because of a knee injury.
That's right. It's been a difficult few months for Sam Kerr. She ruptured her ACL during a training camp, and it's bad news for Kerr. It's bad news for Chelsea. It's bad news for Matildas and probably for Australian football as well. So that injury happened while she was at the training camp in Morocco. She was ruled out for the rest of the Women's Super League season. The details of her recovery, the timeline for that, they are being kept private largely. So it's not entirely clear when she might return to the field, but certainly many commentators have said at this stage it looks very unlikely that she'd be back fit in good form for the Olympics. So a difficult couple of months for Sam Kerr, and certainly it doesn't look like this will bring her much good press, this latest incident.
That's our Europe correspondent, Isabella Higgins. Evans, and that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Have you ever struggled to get a response from an insurer, or have they fought you on the details of the claim? Well, customers are increasingly calling them out for not paying out. Today, investigative reporter Adele Ferguson reveals the dirty tricks of insurance companies. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.